Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 290. Today we go to a little piece of Portugal in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, the Azores. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. We do have a warning from Olympic National Park. They're telling hikers not to pee in the woods. And the reason they're doing that is they're finding the resulting salt deposit may attract the animals, especially mountain goats who are hanging out on some of the trails, causing them to close them. Speaking of not welcome, a restaurant in Pennsylvania has caused a little controversy because they have banned children under six. Because of noise complaints from older customers, they are no longer allowing kids in the restaurant. And then speaking of unhappy customers, a man was awarded $12,000 from a jury in Canada because he was served 7-Up. Okay, it was really because he was served 7-Up in English instead of French. The Official Languages Act requires Air Canada to communicate and provide services in both official languages in Canada. For links to all those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome back to the show Janine Barone, a New York City travel writer. She was on the show earlier talking about Estonia, and this time we're talking about the Azores. Janine, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Chris.
First of all, where are the Azores? We're talking about islands.
Yes, it's an archipelago, and it's Portuguese, and they really are literally and figuratively in the middle of nowhere. They're 1,000 miles from any coast, 1,000 miles from the Portuguese coast, and 1,000 miles from any other coast on the western side. So you really feel very isolated when you're there.
And why should someone go to the Azores?
If you want to be in a place that feels very unspoiled, but is so close, actually, to fly there, a place where you feel like you've stepped back to another era, then that's why you should go to the Azores.
Now, a friend of mine, Gary Arndt, is in the Azores right now also, and he's suggesting that if someone's on the round-the-world trip where you have to, you know, continually head east or continually head west, that this is one place that people don't think about because it's in between Europe and the U.S.,
Absolutely. In fact, it's funny, I have so many savvy travel friends, and when I first mentioned the Azores, they had no idea where in the world they could possibly be, and they surely did not know that they were Portuguese. So it's a reason to go there. These are just gorgeous islands. Each island has its own personality and character. I just adore them.
So what would you recommend for, say, a 1 to 2 week itinerary in the Azores?
Okay, well, I've visited 5 of the 9 islands, but what I would suggest is you can take SATA Airlines from the east or the west coast. On the east coast, it's from Boston, and SATA goes directly to São Miguel, to Ponta Delgado, the capital of São Miguel. So I would spend several days on São Miguel. It's the largest island, or one of the larger islands, and it's the easternmost island. There are 2 islands there, but I would spend time there. And then I would fly to the central island. So you would fly to Terceira, and then you could take another plane to one of 3 islands, Pico, Fael, or São Jorge. And I would actually, if you have 2 weeks, I would go to each one of those three, Fayal, São Jorge, and Pico. And what's really great is if you want to do these islands on a budget, you can take a ferry between Fayal, São Jorge, and Pico. If you don't get seasick, it's a great way to see the islands.
Let's slow down a bit and do those in order. And what would we see there? So you started us off at São Miguel.
You would fly from Boston to São Miguel directly into the capital, which is Ponta Delgado.
That's like the door of the cat or something like that.
Ponta Delgado. Oh, yeah, of course. But what's wonderful about São Miguel is there are so many volcanically focused activities there. Mm-hmm. A place you should not miss is called Furnas, F-U-R-N-A-S. And this is an old crater that is covered in foliage. It's very tropical looking, except it's a crater that still is active. So you have steam and steam vents and sulfur and bubbling pools. And it's just so interesting. In fact, one of the most interesting things about Furnas is you can have this stew called cocido that they cook in the hot steam on the lakefront there. And you see they're mostly men putting the pots of cocido. It's a stew, very heavy with lots of meats and kale and sweet potatoes, and they bury it in the hot earth. And many hours later, they dig it up, and you watch them dig this up. It's just so unusual. And then you can go to a local restaurant to eat it, which is what I did. So this is something not to be missed.
And I'm surprised it's not a fish stew or something like that. You're out there in the middle of the Atlantic.
Well, the Azores are certainly noted for their fish, and Furnas, of course, you can get wonderful fresh fish all over. But the cocido is something unusual. And yes, it can be made with fish as well, but it's typically with chicken and pork, blood sausage, beef, kale, potatoes. It's quite hearty. And if you've been hiking all day, which is something you want to do on São Miguel, there's beautiful trails, then this is a great way to replenish your energy stores.
Excellent. Now, when I think of volcanic islands, I don't necessarily think, for instance, of pristine white sandy beaches. So what are we talking about in terms of the Azores? What does it look like?
Well, first of all, aside from the somewhat white beaches on Santa Maria, and there aren't many of them there either, the beaches are black sand.
Okay, that's what I wondered.
And there are very few of them. And they're really, you know, though the guidebooks might say go to the beaches, there are plenty of other things you could do rather than go to the Azores for their beaches. Okay. Each island has a different look, but the islands are all very wild and rugged. There are jagged peaks on many of the islands, and some are snow-covered, like on Pico, because it's an 8,000-foot mountain. On São Miguel, which we were just talking about, you have dense foliage, tall trees, and you have high sea cliffs. And you can hike to the tops of the cliffs and then take trails to the base where you find these flat, fertile lands called fajas, which are F-A-J-A. A faja is a fertile plain at the very, very base of a sea cliff. It's quite unusual to do this kind of hike. You don't expect to see agricultural products grown at the base of a sea cliff, but that's exactly what you see. So there's so much to see in the Azores. Also on São Miguel, there are these two, they're twin lakes called Sete Cidades. And they used to be different colors. One was green and one was blue. But I guess because of pollutants, etc., they're kind of both an off-blue color. But they're just so beautiful. And so every island has something volcanic going on, whether it might be stone houses that are made of black lava stone. Or even on Pico, the vineyards, and they're noted for their wonderful wines, the vineyards have walls around the vines to protect them from the salt and from the winds. And these are black lava stone walls. So it's a very eerie feeling walking or bicycling along these paths that line vineyards that are basically all black stone walled. It's quite interesting.
Interesting. And I assume that's the pumice stone, what we would call in Hawaii the
Well, it's basalt.
Basalt. Oh, so it's the harder. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Huh. You mentioned that the different islands were different. They have their own character. So how would you describe the character of the three different islands you recommended we fly to or take the ferry to?
Right. So after São Miguel, the other three are São Jorge, Fael, and Pico.
Okay.
And again, you can take a ferry among them. It's a nice way to do it. Very short ferry and very inexpensive. Fael is quite interesting because it has a port town called Horta, H-O-R-T-A. Uh-huh. And it's a town that really goes back centuries and has always been a town where the whalers would go, where buccaneers would dock. Nowadays, all kinds of yachtsmen dock in the port. It's very colorful, literally and figuratively, because the port has a collage of boldly colored paintings right on the waterfront. And this collage is kind of like the tale of the buccaneer that was done by the shipsmen. And so you could follow their life just by walking along the port, seeing what they've sketched. And then you go into a cafe that is another must-see called Peter Cafe Sport. It's been around since the early 1900s, and all the yachtsmen go there, and they have long gone there, whether you're eating fish or a very cute little treat. It's a sandwich. It's a grilled ham and cheese with pineapple. And that's kind of unusual, but quite tasty and very inexpensive. So Fael has its boating community, but it also has something quite unusual. Back in the 50s, there was a year-long volcanic eruption that completely coated all of the houses and the lighthouse at one end of the island. Somehow no one died. And yet you can go to this part of the island called Capelinhos, C-A-P-E-L-I-N-H-O-S, and you can see the buried, almost buried lighthouse. You can see the rooftops peeking out from under the volcanic rock. It's quite eerie as well, and something many people would never have an opportunity to see. So that's Fael. And Pico is noted for its mountain. Uh-huh. Many people hike the mountain, Pico Mountain, the 8,000-footer. But what I did is I focused in on wine because the island has long been known for its wines for centuries. And what's really cool is you can visit a wine cooperative where you can have a tasting of the wines. They have a really great table wine called Basalto, which sounds like basalt. It's a red table wine. It's very strong, but I liked it. And they have a wine museum, and you can read and see all the photos of the grapes growing, the history of wine production. You can look at all the machines that have long been used to press grapes. So you can see already these two islands are quite different. The volcanic activity that buried part of Fael and the vineyards surrounded by black stone walls on Pico. And what makes São Jorge so spectacular are the hikes to the Fajás that I had mentioned, those fertile plains at the very base of sea cliffs. And there's one hike that should not be missed on São Jorge. It goes to a hamlet called the Caldeira de Santo Cristo. Anyone could do this hike. It's not especially rigorous. And you go through this beautiful area full of blooming flowers and native plants with heather and hydrangeas of all colors and cedar. And this is native flora that you don't find anywhere else except in the Azores. It's a pastoral landscape. But the really curious thing is, once you've done this hike and you've gone all the way down to the Fajá, you can eat at a very, very tiny little restaurant, and you can eat clams that are coming out of a local saltwater lagoon right there. And it's the only place in the Azores that you can find clams. So it's quite unusual. And another thing São Jorge is noted for is its cheese factories. You can visit these cheese factories. They're free. And you can taste the cheese. It's almost like a cheddar. It's very smooth, a little sharp. So each island is noted for something different.
Is there a good time to go to the Azores? I mean, we're talking about an area that's not tropical, but we're kind of in a temperate zone, I would say.
Well, each island, in other words, the farther west you go, the more likely the weather might be inclement, particularly the western islands like Flores, F-L-O-R-E-S, a gorgeous island, but it could be quite wet there. And you can see when you get there that the wetness definitely does something for the flora because there's plenty of it. But if you want the best deal to get airfare deals, hotel deals. It would be September through and before Christmas. The weather is wonderful. It's warm. And the deals, as I said, are fabulous. So that would be great for someone on a budget who wants to experience something quite exotic without paying exotic prices.
Interesting. What's going to surprise me about the Azores?
I think how unspoiled they are. Because, for example, I would be in São Jorge, and obviously Ponta Delgado is the capital, so it's busy as one would expect a capital. And yet, a few minutes from there, you'll see an old man on a horse-drawn carriage transporting milk in an old steel barrel. You'll see cows out in the pasture being milked. You don't find Starbucks or fast food, McDonald's type thing. So you really feel that this was the Portugal of many decades ago. It's hard to find a place like this. And if you do find places like this, it usually takes a long time to get there. It's only 4.5 hours from Boston, so that's pretty great.
My impression is that it really, we are talking about a place that, even though it's 1,000 miles from Europe, still feels very European.
Well, absolutely. You have a lot of churches, as you would in Portugal, for example. But what's interesting here about the churches is, yes, they're whitewashed, but again, the volcanic theme comes through. They all have strips of basalt rock on the facade, and many of them have cobblestone paths leading up to them that are all made of black rock. So wherever you go, you can't get away from the volcanic activity. Another interesting thing, since we're back on São Miguel, something you would never expect to find there are pineapples. I mean, what are pineapples doing in the Azores? But there they are. And unlike in Hawaii, they're not being grown out in the fields. They're grown in a hothouse.
Ah, okay. All right. I was going to say, we're talking about a place that's far enough north from where Hawaii is that did strike me as a little surprising. The vineyards, not so much, because we're talking about weather in the 70s or so,
right,
in that area, the time that you were talking about, September, October, November. So
exactly.
Interesting.
Right. And these pineapples are really tasty. They're extremely sweet. They are smaller. And what's interesting is, if anybody's interested in agricultural practices, and I was, what they do in the greenhouse in order to make them all bloom at the same time is they seal all the windows at one point in the year and they burn the old leaves. So they are smoking out everything and it forces them to bloom en masse. So that's kind of unusual.
My father worked in the greenhouse business, so I know a little bit about greenhouses. They put me through college. And part of the whole idea there is that you often are changing the length of days and things like that as well for typical greenhouses, just to encourage things to bloom or to grow or whatever in the way that they would in the wild.
Right.
Now, you've been to the Azores multiple times or just
yes.
This one?
Okay. No, multiple times.
As you were preparing the first time and looking up the guidebooks, what did you find that they recommended that you thought really kind of missed the mark?
Well, the beaches.
Okay.
This is not a focal point of the Azores.
So if someone says, I really want to go to the beach, you wouldn't say, well, then you've got to go to the Azores.
Oh, absolutely right. No, that's not your place. Go someplace else. The Azores are for people who want to get in touch with nature, mm-hmm, and to want to feel that they are seeing people really in touch with the land. And I'm very much a proponent of that. You know, I'm a tree hugger. And I love to, I really am.
And sorry, you're from New York, did you say?
I know.
So you hug both of them. There's.
Well, I do love trees. I visit parks here all the time. There are all these hidden parks.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. But so I would not focus at all on the beaches. I would instead, and yes, Ponta Delgado obviously gets a lot of write-ups in a guidebook. It's the capital of São Miguel. But sure, you spend some time there, but then move on. Because on São Miguel, it's Furnas that I've mentioned that
right,
is so wonderful. And another place you should think about is the original capital of São Miguel, which is Vila Franca de Campo. This is a beautiful, very low-key town. And anybody who likes sports, there's something really cool to do because there's a sunken volcano off the coast. And you can either take a shuttle boat to it, to this submerged volcano, because it's a lagoon now and it's a nature reserve. It's quite pristine. Or if you like to kayak, you can kayak right from the shore. It's a great place for scuba diving, snorkeling. And there are all kinds of lovely seaside restaurants in Villafranca. So I wouldn't miss that either.
A little curious, and I know I'm going to ask you a history question. I know history is not your bit. But, and I don't know Portuguese, but it sounds like the name of that town would be the French village of the fields. Is there a French influence in that field, in that particular city?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't know.
Okay.
But it was the original capital up until the early 1500s, and the reason the capital shifted to Ponta Delgado is because of the massive earthquake that destroyed the town. So that accounts for the shift. But another interesting thing about that town is they have a traditional cheesecake that's not like any other cheesecake. It's not like the slice of cake, but it's something definitely worth trying out. It's a tiny, tiny little disc-like cake, and it's called queijada. It's made of cheese, obviously, but it's quite tasty, and it doesn't at all resemble, as I said, what we think of as a cheesecake.
Now, I know you are a foodie, more than a history buff. So places that you would recommend to eat besides the one you've named so far?
Well, let me start with Furnas. In Furnas, because we talked about the cocido. Mm-hmm. Cocido can be expensive depending on where you get it because of all the preparation involved, you know, digging the ground and pulling it back up. But there's a place called Tony's and another place called Maroma. And they're both in Furnas. And you can get really good cocido there. So that's worth doing. In Fael, I mentioned Peter Cafe Sport. This is a great restaurant on the port. All the fish there, super fresh. And of course, that ham, cheese, and pineapple sandwich is not to be missed. Also in São Miguel, there's a place in Villafranca called the Praia Cafe. The word praia means beach, so it's very near the beach. And that's a good restaurant as well. But some things, aside from cocido, that you might want to check out when you're in the Azores, because they're noted for that, is spicy octopus. You really won't find that anywhere else. And croques. It's C-R-O-Q-U-E-S. This is a mollusk, and it's boiled. It's quite sweet. So these are some of the local dishes that I would definitely try.
Okay. And then any place you would recommend to stay?
Oh, I have a precious place that is a must stay on the island of Flores, which, as I've mentioned, is the westernmost part. There's a place called Aldeia de Quadra. And aldeia is the Portuguese word that means an old village. That really harkens back centuries. And what they have done here, this is a village, a hamlet, actually, from the 19th century. All these buildings, there are many of them, were the original buildings where people lived. And then it became abandoned over the years as older people died and young people left. Some went to the United States, or others moved elsewhere in Europe. And it was converted into an accommodation. So you have an opportunity to live in a hamlet during your stay that had never seen cars. There are no cars that have ever touched these lanes. And they're all decorated in the traditional decor. So you might have a floral wreath on the door. You might have an antique dresser. An old bread oven might be in the wall, the same bread oven that was once used by the people. And each room is named for an original resident. So this is a really great place to stay, and it's not expensive.
Interesting.
And on Pico, there's an aldeia also. It's much smaller. It's called Aldeia de Font, F-O-N-T-E. And it's also made of stone with a very welcoming owners that will go out of their way to point out good places for hiking. They have a bicycle that you can take out. So those are the kind of places I look for, kind of very low-key, non-chain, of course. Not that you'd find chains in the Azores.
And what was the best day you've had in the Azores?
Probably that hike on São Jorge I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I didn't run into anyone. That's quite unusual. It was myself and my guide who pointed out all the botanicals. So you felt like you had an education along the way, and you were kind of at one with the world. All you had was the sky to observe the clouds and the botanicals all around you. And then you climb down, and all of a sudden, there you are on a fertile plain, and we run into surfers. What are surfers doing in this of all places? Well, it turns out that Fajar that I mentioned to you, the Caldera de Santo Cristo, is noted for its huge waves, and surfers come from all over. So you go from isolation to meeting people again, and it's nice to be in a place where it's very hard to get to, and it obviously is.
And as you talk about meeting people, who is the local who's made the biggest impression on you?
I'd say it was my guide in San Miguel. She just was a wealth of information. I wanted to really get in touch with all of the traditions of the people. I wanted to learn everything I could, from what feast days they celebrate to why they turn the cheese all the time in the cheese factory. And I don't speak Portuguese, I speak Spanish. So though they can understand Spanish, they speak back in Portuguese, which isn't going to help me. So she was my connection to getting in touch with the people. And it was just wonderful.
Excellent. What's one thing that makes you laugh and say only in the Azores?
Well, I guess it might be the mañana thing. In other words, you think the museum is going to be open. There it is on the door. It says open and you're there and not open. And it's not just the Azores. It's kind of the Mediterranean. But it might be particularly endemic in the Azores because nobody's rushing around there, let's face it. I'm rushing around because I'm a New Yorker, but nobody else is.
Right, right. Well, and you're trying to gather as much information as you can for the travel writing.
I am, but I'm not low-key. I'm never low-key. So even though I'm in the Azores, I bring my type A persona with me.
As we go to wind this down, any other tips that you think that people should know before they go to the Azores?
Well, one good thing is it's so easy to get around on each one of the islands. Should you want to rent a car, which is obviously quite convenient, they have this thing called a smart car. And apparently none of the people who are there in Europe, they don't want it because it's so tiny. But it's only 20 euros a day. Who can rent a car for 20 euros a day? So that's pretty fab. They also have a public bus system. And I know I've been on plenty of islands where you just can't get around by public transportation. But you can on the Azores. And another thing is in Ponta Delgada, they have a trolley system. So if you want to get around during the day to see some of the highlights of the city, you can use a trolley. So these islands are surprising in so many ways. You think they're so far. You think they're difficult to get to. They're difficult to get around, and not true on all fronts.
Excellent. So in terms of packing, pack the swimsuit, sure, but pack your hiking boots.
Oh, absolutely pack your hiking boots. And pack your swimsuit, though, to do some good snorkeling.
Oh, okay.
Wonderful snorkeling. And if you're a diver, plenty of places to go diving. I'm not a diver, but there are some for the super advanced as well as those who are not.
Okay. Last three questions. Your best money-saving tip?
I always ask a local where they eat lunch.
Ah, okay.
And I do this all over. In fact, I've been known to stop people on the street and say, "Do you live here?" "Yes." "I'm looking for a place that you would eat for lunch. Where would it be?" And invariably, it's tasty and economical.
Excellent. Okay. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in the Azores when what?
When you're bicycling and you're stopped in the middle of the road by all the cows and the farmer.
And if you had to describe the Azores in three words, what three words would you use?
Back in time.
Excellent. And Janine, where can people read more about your travel writing?
Oh, thank you, Chris. At jthetravelauthority.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much for coming back on the show and sharing with us your love for the Azores.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
In news of the community, if you happen to be in the Boston area the week of July 24th, 2011, I'll be going to two different events. One is WordCamp Boston on that Sunday, and the other is a Meet Plan Go meetup on the Monday night. And you can find out information about both of those at the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. And then speaking of fans, I heard from John, who commented on the Travel to Nigeria episode from last week. I've listened to over 200 episodes of the show, and certainly my favorite. David had an obvious passion for and gave good insights into Nigeria. Thanks for a wonderful show. And John, thanks so much for the comment. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler so my wife and I can go out and watch the last Harry Potter movie. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, share your comments with the community by posting a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.